Okay, so we resume our post-Pesach deliberations, and we meet the Parsha of Kedoshim. And Kedoshim begins, of course, with the famous injunction, I guess, mitzvah, if it is a separate mitzvah of Taryag, certainly an statement from the Torah, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem. Speak to the whole congregation of the Jewish people. Say to them, Kedoshim tihiu. You shall be Kedoshim, you shall be holy. Ki Kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. For I, Hashem, your God, am holy. So this is the eponymous Kedoshim tihiu, an instruction to be holy. And as we can appreciate, it's worthwhile devoting a couple of moments to ponder what exactly is the meaning of Kedoshim Tihiyu. For the simple reason, it's easy. It's an easy word to translate. Kedoshim means holy. And then what? What does that mean? The concept of holiness could mean anything. And like many things that could mean anything, if it's not defined, it runs the risk of not meaning anything because it just, it eludes us. And there are many different approaches to this Pasuk of Kedoshim Tihiyu from the great Rishonim, Rashi, Rambam, and others. But we'll take our cue this evening from a comment of Rashi before the words Kedoshim Tihiyu. Rashi notes that the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tihiyu is to be said El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, to the entire congregation of the Jewish people. If we're alert to the nuance of the Pasuk, that's something of a departure from the norm. Right? The standard is Daber El B'nei Yisrael. And here, it doesn't say Daber El B'nei Yisrael. It says Daber El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. There is an emphasis on the entire congregation. And Rashi, citing Chazal, picks up on this and says, Melamed, this teaches us, Shene'emra Parsha Zo Behakhel. This Parsha needs to be said publicly, with all assembled. For there are many major tenets and institutions of Torah that are dependent upon it. So, according to Rashi, the extra words Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael indicates that the Parsha of Kedoshim is to be said in front of all. And many Mefarshim picking up on this explain that the reason why the Parsha of Kedoshim is to be said to all, when all assembled, is because that's where Kedusha will be found. That's who Kedusha is for. It's for all, and it's when all are assembled. And what does this mean? Obviously, we know there are many alien approaches to this matter which take the idea, the notion, that Kedusha, firstly, is not for everyone. It's not for the general populace. Rather, it's for select individuals only. And moreover, it comes to them by withdrawing and seceding from society at large. They live some type of lonesome existence with nothing to distract them, and they can dedicate themselves to the pursuit of holiness, whatever that means. And the Torah emphatically says that this is not the case. Kedoshim Tihiyu is said to everyone. The Jewish people, as a people, are called Am Kadosh, the entire nation, because Kedusha is in the province of the people as a whole. And that's the first point. Not only is it for everyone, but it comes, in a sense, from being with everyone. For the way some Mefarshim understand, the opening of Kedoshim Tihiyu, which is followed by many mitzvahs, all sorts of mitzvahs, Ben Adam LaMakom, Ben Adam LaChaveiro. The very next pasuk talks about respect for parents or to fear parents, and keeping Shabbos, and avoiding Avodah Zarah, and being honest in business, and being generous to the needy. It's a whole variety of mitzvahs. What is the relationship between all of these mitzvahs and the opening injunction of Kadoshim Tiyu? The answer is, this is the practical method of attainment of Kadoshim Tiyu. Where will a person find Kedusha? By doing the mitzvahs. And indeed, as much as it's obvious, but we say it the whole time. Before we make before we do a mitzvah, or many mitzvahs as a rule, we make a bracha. And the nusach of the bracha is, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosa. Hashem sanctified us through the mitzvahs. That means that the way to find kedusha, it's not elusive, it's not abstract. Rather, it's through performance of the mitzvahs, through dedicated performance of the mitzvahs. And this brings us to a very, I believe, a compelling and fascinating point. One of the more recent figures to discuss the concept of Kedusha was one of the great Rosh Hashivas of pre-war Europe, Reb Shimon Shkop. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Telz and then in Grodno. His Sefer Shara Yosher is a classic for in-depth Talmud analysis. And in the introduction to his Sefer Shara Yosher, Reb Shimon Shkop discusses the concept of Kedusha. And to hear a Rosh Hashiva speak with all of the Talmudic methodology about the concept of Kedusha, what does it mean? It means as follows, says Reb Shimon. We're familiar in halacha with the concept of hekdesh. Every once in a while, we come across, this is for hekdesh. This belongs to hekdesh. What does it mean for something to belong to hekdesh? It means something that is dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. There's different types of hekdesh, but that is the general domain. Hekdesh means to be dedicated to a higher cause. Kedusha comes when a person is dedicated to a higher cause. Kedoshim Tihyu means be dedicated, be idealistic. And what are the higher causes? The higher causes are Ben Adam LaMakom, Ben Adam LaChaveiro. Be idealistic and dedicated to service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and service of the Jewish people. That is Kedusha. But ultimately, it's a matter of a person's mindset. That means to say one can fulfill mitzvahs. This is, in a quote-unquote, more than fulfilling mitzvahs. Being dedicated to mitzvahs. Being dedicated to higher living. If a person has that approach to life, that their life is about being idealistic and dedicated, they will naturally lead what we would call a holy existence. But that is what Kedusha is. And therefore, Kedoshim Tiyu introduces a gamut of mitzvahs. And between all of them, and many of them require other people, and it's about day-to-day things, it's about business dealings and your interactions with other people and the way that you go about your daily affairs. That's where Kedusha is to be found. Melamed Shepar Shazo Behakhel Ne'emra. So these are very, I believe, profound opening words with regards to the otherwise abstract and elusive concept of Kedusha. And having discussed briefly the opening of the Parsha, let us take a look at a couple of the mitzvahs in Parsha's Kedusha. And the first that we will discuss is in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Yud Aleph. And as we will see, there's a very interesting discussion that is spawned from this pasuk. How does the pasuk begin? Lo tignovu. Lo tignovu. Do not steal. Okay. Now this might sound like something we've heard before. If you know your Aseres Hadibros, so you will remember that one of the ten is not to steal. lo tignov. Rashi, again from Chazal, explains the difference between lo tignov in the Aseres Hadibros and lo tignovu in our parsha. And interestingly, Rashi says that one can see each one from its context. The Aseres Hadibros there are dealing with capital cases, among them murder and adultery and so on. And one of them is lo tignov, because the specific prohibition there is against stealing people, against kidnapping. That's lo tignov in the Aseres Hadibros. But in terms of stealing items, the prohibition actually comes from the more generally stated lo tignovu in our parsha. So that is Rashi's comment here, to distinguish between lo tignov of Yisro and lo tignovu of Parshas Kedoshim. But some say that our pasuk of lo tignovu, which prohibits stealing, also includes something else. There is a concept in halacha which is called genevas das. Genevas das. What is a good translation of genevas das? That we'll have to see. I think the practical translation is to be deceitful. Genevas das. But the Gemara actually gives some very interesting examples of what genevas das is. This is the Gemara in Maseches Chulin, Daf Tzadik Dalet. Three very interesting examples. Tanya, Hayar Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir would say the following. So the Gemara cites a brisa, a teaching from Tanoi. Number one. Al yisarhev Adam lechaveiro. Lisodetzlo. You should not ply a person with invitations to come and dine with you. V'yodea bo she'eno so'ed. You know that this person does not eat out with other people. So if you know that he's not going to say yes, so don't ask him the whole time. Oh, please, you must come. We'd love to have you. And you know that the answer is going to be no. Okay, we'll come back to that. Number two, velo yar belo betikrovis. You shouldn't, similar to the first one, you shouldn't offer him and ply him with offers for gifts. V'yodea bo she'eno mekabel. You know that he doesn't accept gifts. Oh, maybe would you like this? Would you like this? He doesn't accept. You know the answer will be no. So don't keep asking him. And finally, lo yiftach lo chavios hamechuros lechen vani. What does this mean? So a bit of background to hospitality in Talmudic times. People used to keep their wine in barrels, and the best wine comes from when you first open the barrel, and it will keep for a few days or a couple of days, not much more. For this reason, you only open one barrel at a time, because you're exposing it to the air, and therefore you never really open a new barrel until the first barrel is finished. Unless, and this now is an outstanding gesture of esteem for your guest, if he is someone for whom you would open a new barrel of wine, even when the first barrel is not yet finished, that is an indication that he is a highly esteemed and valued guest. Now, if you're prepared to do that, very nice. It's a wonderful gesture. But sometimes it can happen that you're fine to open a new barrel of wine anyway, even though he's just an ordinary guest. Why? Because although normally you wouldn't open a new barrel without first finishing the old barrel, because it only keeps for a couple of days. But what if you have arranged to sell all of your barrels? A large sale, 10 barrels, tomorrow, to some dealer. So you can open any of them, And it's fine because you're only going to have them for today. And therefore, under these circumstances, you have no problem opening a new barrel, even if the first one hasn't been finished. But what if your guest doesn't know that? He doesn't know your business dealings. All he sees is that you apparently consider him to be an outstanding guest because the first barrel hasn't finished and here you are bringing out a new barrel. He's very touched by this gesture. And in reality, it has nothing to do with him. It's not your great admiration of him as a guest. It's just the fact that this is all going tomorrow anyway. You may as well enjoy the first cup out of every barrel. So he might get the wrong end of the stick. And Rebbe Meir says, so don't do that. You are creating a false impression. And that is called Genevas Das. So if we can summarize the three examples, there are others that are given in the Gemara, but these three are given as a group. To get to repeatedly invite him, but you know that he doesn't eat with other people. To repeatedly offer him gifts, but you know that he doesn't accept gifts. And to open the wine which he thinks you're opening in his honor. And really, it has nothing to do with him. Don't do that. That's deceitful. That's misleading. And all of these are called Genevas Das. Before we get to why they're called Genevas Das, what does this have to do with our parsha? Well, the pasuk that we just read is Lo Tignovu. And according to a number of Rishonim, Tosfos, Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, the Yireim, part of the prohibition in this pasuk is Genevas Das. That means whatever Genevas Das is, it's actually a Torah prohibition coming from the pasuk of Lo Tignovu. Others argue, others say this is a rabbinic prohibition, and interestingly, this would appear to be the Rambam's position. How can we know? The Rambam doesn't openly say one way or the other whether it's from the Torah or not. But as Mefarshim point out, the Rambam brings all of these cases of Genevas Das, the invitations and the offers of gifts and all of that, the Rambam cites them in Hilchos Deos. Hilchos Deos is where the Rambam codifies correct conduct. If the Rambam was of the opinion that Genevas Das is a Torah prohibition coming from Lo Tignovu, it is argued that the Rambam would have cited all of these examples in Hilchos Geneva, where he deals with a Torah prohibition of stealing. So the fact that the Rambam, as much as we call it Genevas Das, but the Rambam did not discuss these in the laws of Geneva, but rather discussed them within the general context of proper conduct, which is called Hilchos Deos, this gives many to understand that the Rambam does not consider this to be part of the Torah prohibition of Lo Tignovu, but rather a Durabanan prohibition. Why is it called Genevas Das? Geneva is stealing. This doesn't sound like you're stealing. It just sounds like you're deceiving. In all of these cases, you're making yourself out as someone who would love to give him gifts. You know that he's not going to accept. You're making yourself out as someone who would love to host him. You know he's not going to say yes. What are you stealing? That's just being deceitful. But Rashi provides some fascinating words of explanation. You are stealing something. What does it mean to steal? To obtain something illegally or dishonestly. Like what? Like someone's money, someone's property is classic theft. But also someone's regard, someone's appreciation. If they regard you positively, if they give you what are called kudos, belaz, because they feel that you really would love to host them, unbeknownst to them, you'd never ask if you think that they'd say yes. You'd never offer them the gift if you think they'd accept it. You know in advance that the answer is no. That's the only reason why you're asking. So the falseness here actually leads to stealing because you are now dishonestly obtaining their goodwill. Goodwill is also a commodity. It should be earned honestly. If it's earned dishonestly, or by opening the barrel, which makes it seem like you're doing it for them, but that's not really true. They're forever in your debt now. Plony opened a barrel for me at dinner. How can I repay him? And therefore, you have dishonestly come into possession of their goodwill. That's what you've stolen. You literally stole their das. That's why it's called Ganevas Das. So these are the interesting examples of Ganevas Das. A person should never create an impression that would generate or elicit goodwill where none is really fully due. But there are a couple of fine-tuning comments to be made with regards to each of these examples. Actually, the first two together as a group. And the first comment is from the Bach, the Bais Chadash, in his Perush on the Tor. We note, and this is, I think, very important practically, we note that Rabbi Meir told us, Dun al yisarhev. Lisarhev means, not lisarhev, lisarhev, which means you should not ply a person with invitations. And it said, al yar belo betikrobis. You should repeatedly offer to give him things. The implication is, if you ply him with invitations, that is wrong. But if you issue one or two invitations to him, for example, if he's new in town, that is entirely acceptable, even if you're quite sure that he'll say no. And even if you don't really mean it. And the reason why that's not Ganevas Das, says the Bach and those in his school, is because essentially it's a way of saying hello. It's being polite and neighborly. But this is not yet Ganevas Das. Even if you know he won't accept, he's new in town, oh, you're new, you must come round. But you know that he's not going to accept that invitation. That's not Ganevas Das, because that is just a neighborly invitation. And interestingly, Rav Asher Weiss, in his discussion of Ganevas Das, says that there's two ways to understand why this neighborly invitation is not Ganevas Das. Firstly, it could be that Ganevas Das is when you give a person to think that you are giving them special treatment, that for everyone, it deserves a certain level of interaction. But for them, they deserve more. So it's only if you ply them with invitations that they feel that they're unusual or being given preferred treatment. But everyone gets one or two invitations. And therefore, they're not being treated any differently than anyone else. And that is totally acceptable, would not be considered Ganevas Das. But it could be that there's a different way to understand why a neighborly invitation is not called Ganevas Das, and that is that the very fact that everyone does it should lead the person to understand that it's not a real invitation. In other words, it's really an elaborate way of saying welcome to the neighborhood, to say you must stop by sometime. It's really just a nice way of saying I've noticed that you're here and I don't recognize you, so you must be new. Welcome. But to the extent that it's really just much more saying hello and not an actual invitation, as is evidenced, by the way, and I believe this is true, as a rule, no one ever accepts the first invitation. And if they do, so that could be a bit of a surprise. If someone is new in town, you say, oh, I see you're new in town, you must stop by sometime, and they say, when? So that's already cause for alarm, even though they're just taking you at your word. But they must understand that no, the first once or twice invitation is really just saying, I recognize that you're new. It's only from the third and onwards that it actually has the halachic status of an invitation, as opposed to just a nice greeting. And therefore, there's no Ganevas Das because you don't elicit the goodwill that you've invited them. It's just that you've noticed them, which you have. So these are very interesting comments with regard to those invitations. The Gemara was specific to say that you should not excessively invite someone or excessively offer them things, because just a basic once or twice, that is not gnevastas at all. And on the contrary, says the Sma, Sefer Meir HaSinayim, another classic commentary on Chofshei Mishpat, if you, in the interest of honesty, do not invite them even once, it may actually cause them damage, because it looks like you're avoiding them and people will begin to wonder why. So the whole dynamic of how to greet people and what constitutes a correct and appropriate greeting without yet bordering on Ganevas Das, all of these things are discussed by the Poskim. And the same is true as if you meet a person and you say to them, how are you? If you ask them how they are, the indication is that you care what the answer is. If you don't, there's no prohibition of Ganevas Das to ask a person how they are. It's really just a way of saying hello. If they want to find out whether you care how they are, they'll tell you, and then they'll see for themselves. So these are the social dynamics and how Ganevas Das fits in. But what's fascinating is we move to the third case. The third case is you do something, again, you would never open a new barrel unless it's an esteemed guest. Except here, you've sold them all, in which case, that's why all the barrels get opened, unbeknownst to this person who you now, you've stolen their goodwill because they think that you hold them in such high esteem. There is a very interesting case which is mentioned in the Gemara in this regard. And it involves Marzutra. Marzutra was arriving back from a certain journey, and two other rabbis in the Gemara, Rav Safra and Rava, were heading in his direction. Now, the reason why they were heading in his direction had nothing to do with him. They were actually going on their way for some completely unrelated matter. However, they met, and Marzutra thought that they had come to meet him. He thought that they had gone out of their way to receive him. And Marzutra said, "You shouldn't have troubled yourselves, my dear colleagues." To which Rav Safra replied, "We didn't. We're actually, it's nice to see you, and I'm not saying we wouldn't, but we didn't. We're actually here for some completely different reason." And that was the end of the exchange. After that, Rava reprimanded Rav Safra. He says, Why did you say that? You made him feel bad. There he was. He thought that we'd come to meet him. It was everything was wonderful. And you ruined everything. You said, well, we didn't. And you gave him Chalishus Hadas. Why'd you do that? So Rav Safra answered, well, because otherwise it would be misleading. I can't mislead him. To which Rava replied, we weren't misleading him. He was misleading himself. In the words of the Gemara, Ihu da'at'e anafshe, the mistake was his. You don't always need to have someone mislead you in order for you to misunderstand. We didn't do anything to mislead him. And therefore, there is no problem leaving him with the mistaken understanding that we came out for his honor, because there's nothing that we did actively with that intention in order to lead him to that conclusion. This is a very important distinction, and as you can appreciate, will come up many, many times. Because if we go back to the barrel case, no one opens a new barrel unless they're an esteemed guest. It's clear that you're doing this for him in order to give him that impression. That's not acceptable. And that is how the Rambam and others codify the problem, that it's with the intention of misleading him. That's Ganevas Das. But if a person naturally themselves get the wrong end of the stick, you do not have to realign the stick for them and make sure that they get the right end. If they're the ones that made the mistake, you can leave them with that, as long as you did not actively do anything. And Rav Weiss, again, he discusses, I think this can happen at a wedding. If a person turns up at a wedding and you kind of know the chassan side, but actually it's because the kala side invited you, That's why you're there. But let's say the father of the chassan, he comes up and he's overjoyed. I didn't realize we were such good friends. I mean, this is more likely to happen in Israel than it is in Chutz Laaretz, I think, because in Israel, the relationship between the people who are at the wedding and the people who were invited is casual in the extreme. So anyone can turn up at any time for any reason. So he sees you, and he kind of knows you in shul, and he says, oh, that's so lovely of you to come and attend my simcha. Do you need to tell him, actually, I'm not here because of you. I'm here because the Kala side invited me, but mazel tov. So this is very similar to the Marzutra case. In other words, you are not doing anything in order to give him the mistaken impression that you came from him. And therefore, on the contrary, in all of these situations, if Plony got the wrong end of the stick, leave them like that because you haven't done anything wrong. And to correct them would only be to upset them. And this is now the very delicate balance. One has to use wisdom and to be alert and sensitive to know when it's going to be stats, when you are behind their mistake or when they are behind their mistake, and so on and so forth. So these are some classic highlights of the sugya of Geneva stats, which, as we mentioned, is generated from our pasuk of Lo Tiknovu, and according to some, actually even based in the pasuk on a Daraisa level of Lo Tiknovu. From here, I'd like to move on to another of the very well-known mitzvos in our parsha, and that is in Pasuk Yud Zayin. So let's take a look. Again, we're still within Perek Yud Tes, Pasuk Yud Zayin. And we'll read the whole pasuk, and then we'll get to the it's really the phrase in the middle that's the mitzvah that we'll be discussing, but of course the context is always important. Lo sisna es achicha bilvavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart. Hocheach tochiach es amisecha, hocheach tochiach. These double expressions are difficult. The standard translation, as we know, is you shall surely rebuke. There has to be more to it than that as far as the Torah is concerned. There are many things that the Torah does not write in this way. We assume the Torah is sure about everything it said. The Torah forbids murder, and it just says lo tirtzach, and it doesn't say you shall surely not murder, because if the Torah says to do something, then it's quite sure. Either way, hocheach tochiach es amisecha, shall rebuke your fellow, v'lo sisa alav chet, and do not bear sin on account of him. So we will, mitz Hashem, come back to the first phrase and the third phrase, but let's focus now on the hocheach tochiach es amisecha, which is the mitzvah of rebuke. And we find some rather unusual things with regards to this mitzvah, which are mentioned in the Gemara. The Gemara has a discussion, this is in Maseches Erechin and Daf Tet Zayin. How many times do you need to rebuke a person? Once, three times, seven times? I mean, when is it over? And the Gemara gives a surprising answer. It's a machlokas, actually, Tanoim and Amoraim. But the answers that are given are not like any other mitzvah that we are familiar with. One opinion says that you should give tochacha until the person strikes you. Ad haka'a. Okay. Another opinion says until he curses you. These are very unusual amounts. I think we're more used to, you know, Kazayas and Revius and such like. Here, you continue tochacha until he strikes you, until he curses you. What's it all about? So without a doubt, one of the most important elements within the mitzvah of tochacha, which is such a sensitive mitzvah, when you think about it, because what is rebuke? Rebuke is basically alerting someone to the fact that they're doing something incorrect. I mean, that is a very potentially volatile interpersonal dynamic, because people don't like to be told that that what they're doing is incorrect, and therefore it has an aspect of confrontation. How can it work? What's going to lead it to a good outcome? The Rambam says it's imperative that the person that you're giving tochacha to knows that you have their well-being at heart, that you want them to succeed. That's imperative. You want them to do well. And not only does that need to be your intention, it needs to be clear to the one that you're rebuking, for a very simple reason. If it's not clear to them, they're not going to accept your rebuke. Rebuke is accepted if the person feels that you have their well-being at heart. Then they're open. But there's so many other reasons why you might give a person rebuke and the person is closed. For all those other reasons. This is something of a disappointment, perhaps, for some people who feel that the worse you make the person feel when you give them rebuke, the more mahudah the mitzvah is. And along comes the Rambam and apprises us of the fact that that is not the case. But rather, they need to know that you care about them. So says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. And it's for this reason that the Gemara says that there is a mitzvah to give tochacha until a certain point. What is that point? There's different opinions in the Gemara. Perhaps until the point that he strikes you, perhaps until the point that he curses you. Where do these shiurim come from? Where do these amounts, where are they from? We should not think that the point is that when you reach the point when the person strikes you or curses you, that's when you finally fulfilled the mitzvah. And that's why you stop. You don't stop because you fulfilled the mitzvah. You stop because if the person has taken action like that, it's very clear that you're incapable of fulfilling the mitzvah. That's why you stop at that point. As long as you think that your tochacha might make a difference, you got to keep going. But at the point that you realize where it's not going to make a difference, so then you stop because you have no mitzvah anymore. It's like if you shake a lulav and esrog, because at what point do you stop? Either when you finished in all six directions, or alternatively, if your lulav and esrog disintegrate in your hands halfway through, you also stop shaking. It's not because you fulfill the mitzvah. You are manifestly without the wherewithal to be able to fulfill the mitzvah. And this is really the key. And in fact, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky famously, elsewhere, in Parshas Vayetze, explains, based on this idea, how when Yaakov first approaches the shepherds in Haran, right? He's come to Haran and he's looking for Lavan. He says to them, Achai, my brothers, me'ayin atem, where are you from? And they say, we're from Haran, etc. And there's so much to pay attention to in that conversation. But Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is actually very interested in the opening word. Achai, my brothers. Why are they your brothers? I mean, you can say gentlemen, or you can say excuse me, or Achai. Why is he calling them brothers? Are they brothers? Why the opening of Achai? And the answer, says Rabbi Yaakov, is because Yaakov is about to administer a rebuke to them. Because he sees that they're shepherds and they're not really doing anything. Now the answer which they give him is, well, there's this big stone on this big rock, and we need everyone to gather around. Okay, that's the answer. But Yaakov does not hold back, actually, from questioning them about this. The day is, right, well, why aren't you watering the flock? But that's really, in a sense, rebuke of sorts. But why should they listen to him? That's why Yaakov begins by saying, Achai. I don't know you, but we're brothers. Do not think that what I'm about to say is coming from a bad place. And tochacha needs to start with the feeling of achai. Brothers talking to brothers. And this is really what distinguishes between tochacha done right and tochacha done wrong. How can you tell? It depends what's the goal of the person who's administering the rebuke. Because there's two possibilities. Either the goal is, you see someone who's doing something wrong. The goal is to help them get it right. Or the goal is to let them know that they got it wrong. Those are two different directions. They're almost 180 degrees from each other. To make him feel good about the opportunity to get it right, or to make him feel bad that he got it wrong. The question of emphasis is all defining. And with this in mind, if we go back to the pasuk and read the pasuk in full, how does it begin? Before we get to Ocher Tochir, well, it starts, Lo sisna sachicha bilvavecha, don't hate your brother in your heart, Ocher Tochir esamisecha, velo sisa alav chet. Now, with regards to velo sisa alav chet, do not bear a sin on his behalf. What's that got to do with giving him rebuke? Well, some say because if you don't rebuke him, then maybe you're responsible. So rebuke him so that you shouldn't have to, you could have prevented it, so then you also bear some of the sin. But Rashi says, don't bear a sin. It's not about the consequences of you not giving rebuke. It's make sure you do it correctly. Because if you give him rebuke and you just embarrass him, you just make him feel worthless and ashamed, so you turn this mitzvah into a sin. Lo sisa alav chet, it's meant to be a mitzvah. Hocheach tochiach. But so lo sisa alav chet, so don't turn the whole thing into an aveir. By finding a way to either publicly correct them, or all the ways that some people seem to find the appropriate time to administer tochacha. That's the final clause. Don't let this turn into an aveira. But what about the first clause of the pasuk? Lo sisna esachicha bilvavecha. What's that got to do with hocheach tochiach? I think, based on our discussion with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, we can understand. Because it's possible for tochacha, for rebuke, to come from a place of sinna. Now, we translate sinna as hatred. But it's important to realize that any negative feeling is called sinna. Negative feelings including disdain or dismissal, those are negative feelings. And the Torah is about to present the very sensitive mitzvah of administering rebuke. What are the qualifications? What are the requirements for the mitzvah? Number one, lo sisna sechicha bilvavecha. Make sure there is no hatred. No negative feeling of any kind. Get rid of that, then you're able to proceed. Hocheach tochiach. And interestingly, the classic personality related to tochacha is Aaron. We know that Aaron would be Makarov people. The way the pasuk describes him is Oev es habrios u'mekarov natorah. Right? One should be like Aaron. Hevei tamidav shel Aaron. Be like students of Aaron. Oev shalom v'rodav shalom, to love peace, pursue peace. Oev es habrios u'mekarov natorah. He loves people and is mekar of them to Torah. That's not an accident that those two things are next to each other. One enables the other. What allows a person successfully to be mekar of other people, and whether it's mekar of kir of rechokim or kir of krovim or anyone who's anywhere in between, but the idea of helping people do better, what enables that to be a success? Oev es habrios. If his ava is felt, then his words will be heard. That's the art of tochacha. And in fact, there is a classic comment of the Shaloh HaKadosh. The pasuk says in Mishle, Al tochach leitz pen yisno echa. Don't give rebuke to a leitz. to a scoffer. He'll just hate you. Rebuke and scoffers is not a good mix. Hochech lechacham v'yeavecha. Give rebuke to a wise person. He'll love you for it. So again, the Pasuk says who not to give rebuke to and who yes to give rebuke to. Al tochach leitz, pen yisnerka. Give tochacha to leitz, it will have a bad outcome. Give tochacha to a chacham, it will have a good outcome. Now that's the simple reading of the Pasuk. There's just one problem, and that is it sounds like there's a whole swath of people now who can never be rebuked. I mean, the leitzim are just a lost cause. Don't even talk to them. So you're really just, I wouldn't say preaching to the converted, but in other words, you're giving tochacha to the people that are basically probably okay anyway. I mean, you know, it's always someone self-defining. The people most in need of tochacha, forget about them. So who do you save tochacha for? For the luxury cases who are basically doing everything okay anyway. And the shalos says no. The Pasuk isn't talking about two groups of people. It's talking about the very same person, but the way not to approach tochacha and the way yes to approach tochacha. It also begins with how you perceive them. If a person is doing something wrong, you can swiftly condemn them and write them off. Now, when you give them tochacha, it's very clear that you're relating to them as a leitz. Says the Shalah, don't approach the situation in that way. Don't approach tochacha to someone who needs tochacha with every indication coming from you that you, as far as you're concerned, they're elites and they have no values and they don't care and they're practically hopeless. Because then they won't listen to you. So should you avoid them? No. But relate to them as the second part of the Pasuk says. Hochech lechacham. Deal with them, treat them as a chacham. So many times, the very same tochacha that needs to be administered, it will be rejected if the person feels that they're being antagonized, but it will be accepted if the person feels that they're being embraced. It's the same person. But what message did you give them about what you think about them? If you say, listen, I know you're a late, but here's my religious duty to rebuke you, so that will only generate bad feeling. But if you say, I know you're a chacham, and you know, I'm sure there's ever, and chachamim are always open to learning new things, so then you open the gates for tochacha, and it will come in. It's the same person. Don't be mochiach them as a late, be mochiach them as a chacham, and everything will work out. I will say, if there's ever an example of tochacha from the heart, with the best of intentions, there is an episode which for me always sums it up. Very apropos, today was Yom HaShoah, because it was actually told by someone about tochacha that was administered to him when he was in one of the camps. And the way he tells the story, it's like a story from another world. But he describes that they were in this slave labor camp during the Shoah. They're being worked to the bone. Every day, they receive one piece of bread. That's it, in the morning, and that's their food. So it's starvation rations, and that's what they get. They line up, they get the piece of bread, and then they work until they drop. So what did people do? Understandably, everyone's starving. As soon as you get your bread, and you don't want anything to happen to it, you basically eat it as quickly as you can. And he said, that's what I did. I got my piece of bread every day, and I put it in my mouth as quickly as I could. He said, one day, I got my piece of bread. I ate it as quick as I could. And then someone taps me on the shoulder from behind. So everyone is, of course, full of suspicion. I turn around. Who's there? An older Jew. Somehow, still survived. And he said to me, you know, you're Jewish. You shouldn't eat that way. I saw You just took your piece of bread, you didn't make a bracha, and you just ate it. Imagine receiving tochacha for not making a bracha in that situation. And that's that. But then, says this survivor retelling the story, this older Jew who had just received his piece of bread, he took it, he divided it in half, and he gave me half. And he said, try again. This time with a bracha. That's tochacha from the heart. If a person is prepared not only to point out what you've done wrong, but to part with half of their starvation rations to help you get it right, that's tochacha from the heart. It's an impossible standard. It's light years away. But as we often say, even things that are light years away at least give us a sense of direction, where to be headed in our own tochacha interactions, wherever they may be. Further on the inyan of tochacha, and this again, it's all interconnected, because as the Meshech Chachma points out, there's really two ways to give tochacha. The word lahuchiach means to demonstrate, to prove or to demonstrate, not so much to rebuke. A hochacha is a proof, to demonstrate something. And for this reason, says Meshech Chachma, there's really two ways to correct someone if they're doing something wrong. Number one, you can rebuke them. You can admonish them. Or number two, you can show them. If a person is making a mistake in some mitzvah or whatever it is, you don't always need to confront them in order to appraise them of their mistake. What if you can just arrange to be within their field of vision and they know that you're the type of person that gets things right and let them see how the mitzvah was done right? You didn't even have to speak to them. But if their eyes are open and if you have a good relationship with them, they'll say, oh, Plony did like this. Maybe, you know what, I should ask someone, or maybe that's probably the better way to do it. It's amazing. It's almost like absorbing rebuke. Absorbing through observing. Without having to be rebuked in any type of confrontational way. And that's also something. And the Balei Musar were famous for if they felt in any situation, I think it was even Rabbi Sora Salanter, but certainly of his Talmidim, if so-and-so was doing something wrong, so they would be sure to be in earshot of him, and they would ask the Shaila for themselves. I temporarily forget. How does one do such and such? As if they were asking the Shaila. But Plony heard them ask, and he heard the answer. And there you go. Quick and painless. And there were no words exchanged between the two of them. And tochacha is done. That's another, I guess to rebuke by example, another channel of tochacha to be aware of. But the final point with regards to tochacha, and again, all of this, one needs to use their intuition, one needs to use their, to be alert. Because the Gemara does say that in the same way that it's a mitzvah to give tochacha that will be received, it's a mitzvah not to give tochacha that won't be received. And this, too, requires thought, judgment. Will it be? It's always more convenient not to give rebuke. But to really consider, is it something that won't be received? But if it is, so then that's the mitzvah, is not to rebuke. And we'll finish with a maisa. Chassidish Meiser. It happened once that there was a a certain woman, and she was alone, and she had to bring up her family by herself, very heavily in debt, and impossible to get out of it. And the Rebbe, who was either visiting or became aware of the situation, she needed a fresh start. If she could just be put back on her feet, then that, but buried in debt, she didn't have a chance. He happened to know that the manager of the bank to whom she had borrowed all this money was Jewish. And he decided to pay him a visit. So the Rebbe knocks on the door of the manager, who welcomes him in. Please, welcome. And he comes in and he sits down. And So the manager says, how can I help you? So the Rebbe says, I assume you've come for a mitzvah. The Rebbe says, yeah. I have come for a mitzvah. So he says, well, do you want to tell me about it? And the Rebbe said, no. I don't want to tell you about it. So the manager says, well, I don't really know what type of mitzvah this is because nothing's happening. So the Rebbe said, no, it is a mitzvah. I am doing a mitzvah. The mitzvah that I'm doing is, the halacha says like this, if you see someone and there's rebuke to be had, but in the same way that there's a mitzvah to say something when the rebuke will be heard, there's a mitzvah not to say something when it won't be heard. And I'm pretty sure that what I have to say to you won't be heard. So I came here to fulfill the mitzvah of not saying rebuke when it won't be heard. So this manager was very curious at this stage and said, well, but do you want to tell me what it is? And the Rebbe said, no, because it's not going to make a difference. So the manager said, well, if you tell me, maybe it will. The Rebbe said, no, I don't think so. But he pleaded with him. He couldn't contain himself. He was bursting with curiosity. So he said, please tell me what it is. So the Rebbe says, you know, there's this woman, she's raising her family by herself. She has amassed a lot of debt. She needs a clean start. That debt needs to be erased and she'll be able to make a good thing of things. That's what I came for. But that's why I didn't say anything, because I know that it's not going to make a difference. So the manager says, well, but there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, it's not my money. I'm the manager, but it's the money in the bank is not mine. And the Rebbe says, I know. I told you that it wouldn't make a difference. And you made me tell you what it was all about. And you ruined my mitzvah. So the manager said, but there's nothing I can do. Do you understand? There's nothing I can do. He said, I know there's nothing you can do. And that's why I wasn't going to say anything. But he couldn't leave it like that. And the manager said, well, maybe I'll speak to people. And said, well, speaking to people, I guess, might make a difference. I don't think it's going to make a difference. But Kitzer, by the time the meeting was over, the manager had worked out a way to cancel this woman's debts, and it would all work out. And that is, I guess, the loud silence of the Rebbe, which achieved more through not saying anything than anything could possibly have said. Once again, in each of these situations, a person needs to use their das, needs to use their seichel, in order to be motzechein v'seichel tov b'nei Elokim v'adam. So we've dealt really this evening, of course, kedoshim to you, the two planes of kedusha, ben adam l'amokam, ben adam l'chaver, where we focused actually on the two mitzvahs, two of the mitzvahs, ben adam l'chaver, gnevas das, and ocheach tochiach. And the more we hone the craft of the mitzvahs, ben adam l'chaver, and the more we're able to promote ava v'achva among the Jewish people, so the more we'll have that wonderful synchronicity whereby the Jewish people get together, connected with each other, connected to Hashem, and we should hear Besoros Tovos, Yeshuas V'Nechomos, V'Korov. All the best and have a good week.